I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Okay, guys, welcome back. We've got Joey Gonzalez, the CEO of Barry's Bootcamp, with us, and John, because it's your arena. But you guys are coming up on 25 years,
yeah,
correct?
Yep. It's a quarter of a century.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And how long have you been associated with Barry's?
I've been there about 20 years, so I came very early on.
20 years, is that counting your time as a client or the time you came on as an instructor?
Yeah, I've been, my first class was about 20 years ago.
And then you went from the bottom to the top.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, it took some time, but it was definitely an adventure.
Passion?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, dude, you're physically, you show or you actually exemplify what you sell, which I love. It's not like, we were talking about this weekend. I know it was a long weekend. How like Gold's, like you're just, they're like, hey, you get one free session with your trainer. And you look at the trainer and you're like, yeah.
This trainer needs a trainer.
Yeah, I'm like, do you need me to train them?
What's the origin story on Barry's Bootcamp? Like, you know, growing up in LA, I'd always heard the name, and I think I even, you guys at one point had a billboard. I used to remember maybe on the 405.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the origin story for it?
So there is a man named Barry, and I call him the mad scientist, and it's actually a great story. He was teaching group fitness at Gold's Gym, which is actually where I started in sales. And he was in, you know, one of those small rooms with the like fake, the faux hardwood floors and the neoprene, like little weights and the benches. And he just got so sick of that format that he split the class in half. He sent a bunch of people out to treadmills. The other people grabbed like big dumbbells and brought them back to that space. And he ran back and forth, just kind of screaming the speeds to the treaders and the you know, workouts to everybody on the floor with the weights. And he eventually got fired because it was obviously quite disruptive. And two of his clients invested in him and opened the very first Barry's Bootcamp, which was on La Cienega. But I always think about, you know, Gold's Gym and what a missed opportunity. Let that walk right out the door, you know?
Well, yeah, I was going to say that's not very Gold's-centric, but now they have, you know, well, 24-hour fitness, yeah. Gold's. Yeah. They've all now brought in some sort of cross-functional.
Well, that's actually almost Glassman's from CrossFit's exact origin story. Oh, really? He was training at a Gold's Gym. And started doing this like mixed modal stuff, and they fired him. And clients were like, "Hey, like, where are we going to train? We'll rent the place for you."
Yeah.
So when you're telling this origin story, I'm like, "Oh my god, that's like the exact CrossFit origin story."
It's an important, I think, lesson for organizations to embrace innovation and, you know, keep your eyes open and see what people are doing. And
things. I was just going to say that, almost like a cautionary tale. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've always heard the joke about where was the digital camera invented? Kodak. but the leadership scoffed. And of course, those engineers brought the tech elsewhere, who people who commercialized it, and hence, you know,
killed them.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was like, what wasn't it? Like Blockbuster was offered to buy Netflix. Yeah. And they're like, nah, we're good. Nobody's going to want to do with that. We want brick and mortar, like cassette tapes.
Do you know the statistic on when Blockbuster was at its height, how many stores were being stood up in terms of time? Mm-mm. 17 seconds. Wow. Isn't that odd?
Yeah.
That was in the documentary, which is a great documentary if you catch it. But Joey, so you've hit LA, you're now Miami, but you actually came from Chicago, man. It seems like you've hit all the regions. And is Miami it?
I think so. It's definitely it for now. I move a lot, obviously. My parents live there, and I'm half Cuban. My dad's from Cuba, so I have a lot of family there. So it's a great place, I think, to raise our kids. So we're really enjoying it.
Is your headquarters out of there? Or is it just, okay.
I moved headquarters during COVID. I took the kids and my husband, and we went to Miami and stayed in my parents' building just for 30 days-ish. And in those 30 days, you're familiar with the mayor.
Yeah.
Slid right into my DMs, invited me to City Hall, laid out a whole incentive plan for me to relocate HQ, which was pretty compelling at the time because no one was helping us at all. Fitness really was.
I really like this guy. He's innovative.
Yeah.
He's broken a lot of ceilings. So he hears that you're in Miami.
Yeah.
He sends you a Instagram message?
He did. Yeah.
It's genius.
And so given the benefits of Florida, understand for the business benefits, it just made sense to, you're talking to two Californians here. So
yeah, the business benefits, but also my family ties. Mm-hmm. And you have to remember, this was a time where like my children had not been in school for almost a year. And I was able to get them into a fantastic school, Miami Country Day, within like a month or so. And so my daughter that year turned 5, and I asked her, what was your favorite thing about being 4? I do that every year. And I remember her eyes welled up, and she said, when I used to get to go to school. Mm. I was like, I got to get out of here.
We did almost the same thing. We were here, and we put our kids in a private school because they weren't going to close down. And so my kids never really, I think it was maybe like 30 days they had a break, but for the most part, they went to school.
That's awesome.
And that was like no regrets, because some of the other kids like didn't go back until like after Thanksgiving. They had been out of school for like months.
Yeah.
And like as much as I love the homeschooling idea, like no, it's no way.
No, that's a hard no for me too.
So you start Barry's, you're still in sales for Gold's Gym.
Not exactly. So if we go way back from the age of 13, I grew up doing film, TV. I was an actor. So I was in SAG.
You look the part.
I was in SAG at a very early age. I started doing musical theater downtown Chicago. And that's what brought me to LA. I went to USC. I continued to study that and film and TV. And then I just got very disenchanted with Hollywood, as I'm sure you can imagine, in a short amount of time. And I was kind of at a crossroads looking for what I wanted to do next. And I had a lot of different sort of lifetimes. I was doing real estate sales and obviously waiting tables and a lot of different things. And I started to go to Barry's as a client. And Barry eventually noticed me and said, hey, do you want to be a trainer? And that's where it all began.
Was that a quick yes or?
It was an emphatic yes.
It was an emphatic yes.
I don't want to wait tables anymore. I'll train people.
How big? I mean, what were the sizes of the classes back then?
We had about, you mean, like capacity?
Yes.
About 30 people.
And was that the only Barry's at the time?
There was one in West Hollywood and one in Sherman Oaks.
Okay.
And what I loved about it in terms of being a fit for me is we call them the entertainers, because at Barry's, it's not just someone like blowing a whistle and yelling at you. You're a DJ. You're an entertainer. You're like on mic. You're performing, essentially. So it was a quick learn for me, and I loved it right away.
Yeah, it really set the model. There was a group in Newport called the 12.
Yeah.
That ripped off Barry's Boot Camp to like.
Yeah, one of the guys was from
Irvine.
Barry's Irvine.
Yeah, yeah, totally ripped it off, and then they went and started their own thing because they bought Metrics, which is the gym. Like as I would drive by, it was this bodybuilder gym. I would drive by my office and I'd stop there and work out. And then one day I trained to the 12. And we went in there and it was like there was a room and the trainer was on stage and there was a DJ. I mean, it was like, holy hell, like these people are going to get it. So it was, yeah.
We have been pretty incredible. I feel like our core competency has always been finding and developing superstars. And as a result of that, We've had trainers go on to found, you know, Precision Running by Equinox was one of my trainers. Rumble Fitness was one of my trainers. The founding trainers for Peloton. Like, we just develop talent best in class. And then they go on to do other things, which is great. You know, I always enjoy watching their evolution, but it's fairly easy for us to find new talent and develop them again.
That is a unique organizational talent in itself. I mean, hell, I wrote a book called The Talent War, and we talk about like, one of the biggest indicators of a success of an organization is your alumni. I mean, you look at the West Point. West Pointers are, you know, they'll tell you how great West Point is, but it is. I mean, those guys go on, those guys and gals go on to do great things, but like McKinsey, even if they're in venture capital, they'll always work in that they started with McKinsey. So what is it that you guys do differently that maturates that talent? Is it the bar to even get into the organization, or what's different once they do?
Well, I think Barry's has really earned a great reputation among talent. So I think luckily a lot of people are attracted to us, so that makes recruiting easier. Our training programs are fairly robust. And then I'd say, like, in terms of retaining, you know, I still teach. Like, I'm teaching a class today in 2 hours, you know, so it's an instructor-centric run organization. So it's always top of mind for us. So I think they feel very supported.
I mean, it's just basically classic leading from the front, you know, whereas all of a sudden you get into a CEO position, you're like looking down from the ivory tower, and it's like, I don't think you can run like a very good company that way. At least I've never been able to.
I'm looking through this. You got to see this. It's just like there's not one bad looking person.
Oh, yeah. On no, this they're team. Like, everybody's good looking.
Yeah, they're like, hey, Mike, you've got a voice for TV and a face for radio. No,
or what it is they just find like young, aspiring, like good looking actors and models and like, do you want to be a fitness person? You seem like you got personality.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely have different types of performers come to us often, whether it's dance or whatever. And those are people that tend to spend time on their body and, you know, eat well and practice what they preach.
They live what, people will see what people, or people will be what people can see. Now you've moved to the ranks, and that is not a common story where somebody starts from the bottom and moves to the top. Was it because you had a sense of, I'm going to assume marketing, how to sell this, how to grow it? I mean, where did the business centric skills come that you've scaled this thing, not only nationally, but internationally?
Yeah. So I think it was definitely, I tried to work every single role I could, because I knew from the first day working at Barry's, I knew that is what I wanted to do. And I knew I wanted to invest my own money, and I knew I wanted to become a partner and help scale the business. But I really wanted to understand the business, because I didn't have a degree. I didn't have an MBA. I didn't have any business doing it. So I learned as best I could. Worked, you know, long, hard days for a long time, for about 5 or 6 years before Barry and the partners finally said, okay, you can do this with us. It actually took me walking into a room and saying, look, I've been asking for years. The answer's always been no. I'm going to do this either alone or with you. So you have a choice, and the choice is yours, but I need to know within the next like week. So by the end of the week, they were like, let's do it. And I already had a site in San Diego. And I think it was, I would say my top natural skill, the thing I was born with, is building community. And that has helped internally and externally to develop this culture at Barry's that's really inclusive, that makes people feel good. And that's still my favorite thing, right? I do that with my leadership team at the very top level. And we practice something called servant leadership, which I'm sure you're familiar with, but it's really just
give me your definition, because when you ask people that, you get some wildly different answers. And not to put you on the spot. But.
No, I think it's, if I had to define it in one sentence, it's acknowledging that your position of authority is a privilege and supporting people that report into you.
I love that. I'm going to steal that. I'm a plagiarist. So anything you say, actually, we own the trademark too. So
Yeah, but if you're admitting it, you're not really stealing it.
No, yeah. I've said it publicly.
It's you're like, oh, I'm totally going to take this, but I'm going to give you credit. So is it really stealing?
So Will, my face is voice.
Yeah.
So when you stood the one up in San Diego, that was really where you cut your teeth of, now I'm a general manager. Now I've got to show that I can actually.
That was the first time. And, you know, I wasn't just a kid earning sweat equity. I was investing 50% of all of the new studios. So, and luckily I had saved.
Was that painful at the time?
From acting. It was, it was everything I had. New York was the big moment, though, because up until then we did like 1,200 square feet. There was like a toilet in the studio that everyone used. New York, I signed a lease for like almost 4,000 square feet. the, you know, rent was quadruple what I'd ever paid. I did locker rooms, showers, amenities programs, came up with the fuel bar, which is like our F&B experience. And so that was like an all-in, chips on the table. I took a second mortgage out on my house and was like, if that had not worked, it would have been really, really bad. So
you hear that, like, cautionary tale to everyone, don't take out a second mortgage unless you've got a good business plan and because, you've proven, I mean, the model before.
Yeah, I was going to say for every like, well, you know, one of these, there's 100 of like, man, I mortgaged everything. And
I lost it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to open this smoothie bar.
And like, I mean, when you broke off from CrossFit football and started Power Athlete, I mean.
With CrossFit? You know, at the time when CrossFit hit me up, like I was the only sports-specific CrossFit, but I also owned a CrossFit gym. And I hated the CrossFit gym model. I thought this like group training model and the way it was set up, like I just like, you know, you sit down with a spreadsheet and you're like, I don't know how to make these numbers work. Mm-hmm. And I just like, for me, it was just, I couldn't, the amount of people that it would take to make that gym profitable was like way more in terms of management than I was willing to do.
What city were you in?
We were in Newport Beach.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we were in Newport and like the gym, and like if I could go back and redo it, I would have been in like a 15,000 to 18,000 or 1,800 square foot place. I would have made a smaller, more boutique, more private training like that, like just trying to run a big warehouse of 30 to 50 people on a, you know, $200 a month, come as much as you want, was just like not profitable.
So let me ask this. Do you know, you may know this, you may not, and I can, will stand by. What is the failure rate of CrossFit gyms?
That I don't know, but what they do pretty well is they usually get an owner-operator in there who teaches every class, mm-hmm. and they don't have business systems in this. Like, I think they're trying to do, like, what Barry's was doing with less glitz and glamour and, like, a more gritty kind of deal. I just don't think that they had the business systems to do it. I think the CrossFit gyms today are much better, but you also have to really want to do it. And I was teaching seminars for CrossFit, so it was, like, just I came to the realization I just wanted my own gym to train at with nice equipment that didn't have members that would break my stuff. So that as soon as I realized that, I just went and rented a little like warehouse, moved all my gym equipment, had Power Athlete with a little gym, and sold my gym, and was like the happiest I've ever been. Because I just like, it felt like putting out fires every day, which I'm sure is like, you know, like you got to really be into that. It sounds like you are.
It's the definition of business is finding fires. Solutions to problems.
Yeah, but like I would like come in.
Isn't that life?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I don't know, like there's some I wanted to. I just, yeah, the gym space is a really interesting one because it's also, it's so trans, transactional, where mm-hmm. like, you know, as a coach or a trainer, you invest in these people and then they come in, they're like, I'm not going to come this month. And you're like, why? You're doing great. And you're like, I invested so much time in you and you just walked away from this thing. Like it just was really weird for me.
Well, let me ask this. So with CrossFit, all you have to do is be a certain level, right? You got to go to a weekend seminar and technically you're.
Well, I don't know. Like, I just have a really like interesting point of view of this thing. Like, I think you have to find the right type of people. And like, I think what's interesting with the Barry stuff, like versus like the 12, and I looked at all these different models on it, like you need something that builds community, something that's fun, that people can come in with even like a low level of like training experience and can have a great experience. Mm-hmm. Like if I have to teach somebody like really technical Olympic lifting for you to execute it, like the barrier to entry is really hard. What I liked about Barry's and some of the other kind of boot camps, and like when I looked at like, and I saw the 12, and I think that's how I worked backwards. I was like, dude, this is, looks like one, it looks like fun. People are having a great time and a low barrier to entrance. Like you don't have to be a phenomenal athlete to go in there and get a great workout. Yeah. And they were great. It was fun. Like the coaches were entertaining. They talked about nutrition. I mean, like there was just a lot of like good sticky points that I looked at and I was like, man, this is really well run.
Well, let me ask you this. So me, Mike Sorelli, want to open a Barry's in Austin. I just can't come off the street. Is there some sort of?
Oh, we don't franchise in the U.S.
Interesting.
We're all corporately owned and operated.
Has it ever been franchised?
It was actually. It was. We sold a few. 2010, 2011, mm-hmm. and that was part of my 100-day plan. CEO is going back and buying San Francisco, Boston, and Nashville immediately. Yeah, nice. And we had great operators. Okay. Actually, it just by that point in time, Barry's. We had rebranded and really moved into the premium positioning, always being sort of the most expensive option in whatever, you know, city or trade area we were in. And the more premium a brand is, the more control you need over it. And Barry's always had this incredible brand equity. Even when we had 10 studios, people would be like, I was in Cape Town and saw someone wearing your tank and ran up to the, you know, it was like this thing that's hard to do as a brand. you know, and you
what's
really
the demographic like what's your sweet spot, your target demographic, like what's your ideal customer?
It's changed so much. It used to be back in the day, it was like very elite athletes from, I'd say, 25 to 40. Mm. Now, our average client is 32 years old, but we are all over, depending on the neighborhood. If you look at the demo psychographics per studio, Roslyn, Long Island, is going to look very different than Chelsea, New York City.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
So we serve different clientele in different places, and we do have to be aware of the programming then that takes place in the class, because it changes, right? I remember when I used to teach classes in West Hollywood, they would be very different than when I drove into the Valley in Sherman Oaks and taught a class there. So
and this goes to a point, because you know, with CrossFit, what it used to be, the clown vomiting was like the
Rabdo, whatever.
Rabdo the clown.
Rabdo, yeah.
So that's great.
They did so much good, but yeah, like it did so good to get people like introduced to fitness, but they did so much wrong that I would look at.
And then we used to say within the SEAL community, we're like CrossFit was the killer of like. Of more SEALs than combat, literally, but like guys that were tearing ACLs
constantly.
But here's the problem: like if the training is so severe that your client implodes, you know what they do? They don't come back and they don't continue to pay. Yeah. So like I remember being like, you know, we got into like owning the gym. I remember being like, dude, like I almost felt like protective for our people. I'm like, protect these people, because if they're healthy and happy, they're gonna come. If they're fucking destroyed, they're not coming. And like I think they're, like you said, the first thing was great was community. Like you have to build a community. People aren't just going to show up. And I like, even I'm sure you go to a commercial gym, you see people walking around with their headphones all the time, not talking to anybody. And you're like, this is so weird. Yeah. Like they don't want community. They're like these like little solo pod kind of individuals. And like I want to lift weights with my friends and have a good time. Like I don't want to go just by myself.
I'm all about that. But when I do go to a Gold's, it's headphones on. And I want a shirt that says, I'm working out. Don't bother me.
I'm more than happy to talk to people, because I'm constantly like amazed at the shit people are doing. Like if you go to a commercial gym, I've seen shit that I've been lifting weights a long time. I'll see people do things. I'm like, didn't even know you could use that machine. And I'll ask them, like, what are you doing?
Have you seen some of those like TikTok videos?
They're great.
They're insane.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We're like,
doing stuff like this with the cables.
And you see people are like, or the girls that like set it up, and like some guy like walks over and glances, and then they try to like totally roast the dude. And I'm like, you are training in your underwear. Like I would be terrible. Like I'd walk by and be like, this girl's in her underwear. She's wearing a bra when she's training. Like, and then they're like trying to shame these dudes. I'm like, you're in your underwear. Like as a human, how could you not look at that?
So for the average listener who's never been exposed to Barry's, and I think this is probably what we're most interested in, is talk about the methodology, about the programming, about, you know, how you're going to take somebody from, let's say, subpar health to make them feel the very best they've ever felt.
Yeah. So I think it helps to lay the foundation and say Barry's is half cardiovascular and half strength training, and you go back and forth. And the original concept is treadmills. We now have a strength training only concept. We have a ride concept, which is bikes and strength, but I'll just talk about our core product. You do runs that are not meant to be long endurance. They're shorter with a lot of recoveries. You're given beginner, intermediate, and advanced speeds, but a lot of beginners can't quite get the beginner version, and a lot of advanced are way beyond. So that's another thing we sort of voice over in class, like you do you. You know, we're just glad you showed up. And then on the floor, depending on the day, you're working different muscle groups. So Mondays, arms and abs, Tuesdays, lower body focus, Wednesdays, chest back. So you're kind of rotating through all the different body parts, ending in like full bodies on the weekends. And you go back and forth. And I think one of the things that differentiates Barry's when I look at a very competitive landscape now in 2023 is it's really the only HIIT concept that combines strength and cardio in a very immersive experience. So instead of having like music be the background and your trainer giving you the workouts that you're supposed to do and you chatting with, it's very much like you are sprinting to the beat drops. You're having these amazing hero moments while they're sprinting to like the best part of the song. You're doing burpees and you're all doing it together with 30 seconds with the same recovery. So you're on this journey together. And while it is, you know, meant to be a place for you to connect, Barry's is also one of those places that appeals to people who don't love to work out with other people, because it's very dimly lit. And everywhere you go, you're not watching your instructor on a stage. You're actually looking at you. Every space, treadmill, or floor is right in front of a mirror, and you're watching you, your form. It's like a you versus you moment.
Interesting.
So. Wow.
That The fact that, I mean, have you ever burnt out working out?
Have I ever what?
Burnt out.
What do you mean?
Where you just needed to take like 2 weeks off?
Yeah, I call
end
that,
of season.
I call that life.
Life.
Like all of a sudden, like, I mean, because people are like, oh, I planned deloads. Or I'm like, no, you just go on vacation. Or my wife's like, we have to go somewhere. And I'm like, I just figured that was travel. Like, I just got doing a bunch of travel and I missed a bunch of workouts. And I'm like, oh, that was my deload. I figured life throws you deloads. But maybe for other people that are just like, I go 6 days a week. And you're like, I don't know. That's, I mean, it's kind of the thing which was wild about the 12 that I went to, because I've never actually been to a Barry's. It looked like a rave.
Yeah.
It's like the only thing it like went to, because I used to work security in San Francisco for legs, or sorry, raves, like South of Market. All those clubs in San Francisco, and it looked like the raves.
So
I was like, this was like 10-15 Folsom release party.
Barry was a party boy, and he got sober, and so he wanted a place that felt like the nightclub for people to still be. He could still be a part of it and connected to people in that way, and that's why he did this beautiful, like dark red lighting and incredible sound system. So in his mind, it was a nightclub, but you just happen to be working out.
Makes sense.
I mean, if you can add the fun component, I mean. I get up in the morning, I go lift at Gold's. I had to move out of Lifetime because that was just getting outrageous.
Why was wrong?
Downtown. It was like 200 bucks a month. They don't even have a pool.
Oh.
Was not going to do it. But, I mean, I wouldn't say like I'm having fun. I mean, I'm going through my workout. I do enjoy that, but it's not a fun component. It's just the discipline of getting it done. It sounds like you guys are trying to create an environment where people like get up and they're excited to come in the morning or after work.
And I won't downplay, it is challenging.
Oh, yeah, like, no doubt.
You'll take a class and you'll know you would have never done that on your own. That's why you're there, because you know someone's going to push you really hard and there's so much accountability.
In terms of injury, I mean, with the programming, you guys are very cautious of that.
Yeah, we have, our movements are much different than like what you'd see at a CrossFit. So we don't have very many injuries. And a lot of our clients have been doing this for, I've been doing Barry's 4 or 5 times a week for almost 20 years now. Can you believe it? I'm 70. I look great.
I was going to say, I can't believe you.
The best promotion ever.
I was like, wow, this dude's in his 70s? Like, fuck.
Fuck you. Tall, dark, and handsome. That's where people go to work out.
Dude, I was going to say, my mom's 84. Uh-huh. And so my dad passed away a couple years ago. And she's like, do you know how bad 80-year-old men look? Because my mom's super fit. She walks like 13,000 steps a day. She's got a puppy. Like, people think she's in her 60s. And I was like, no. She's like, oh, it's awful. And she's like, you know how bad 70-year-old men look? They fucking look awful. So my mom is like, this complaint where she's like, maybe I'd like to go out with somebody, but who do I date? I'm not going out with an 80-year-old. They look awful.
I always wondered that. Like, when I'm that age, am I going to look at people my age and be like, God, they look so old? Or do they just look like me and I don't think that?
No. So this is really fascinating.
Depends how you age.
Well, there was a...
You guys are getting really judgy right now.
That's all right.
I'm joking. I'm just being honest.
And, well, there was a... There's an evolutionary biologist named Michael Rose, who's at UC Irvine. He gave an incredible talk, and he's probably one of the foremost experts in the world on aging and anti-aging. But like in evolutionary biology, there's like pre and post Michael Rose. That's how they look at it. And he gave this amazing talk at the Ancestral Health Symposium on fruit flies, and I won't bore you with all this. But as he's giving this talk, all of a sudden he mentions that he got his PhD in 1959, and I'm like doing the math, and I'm like jump on the computer. I'm like, how old is this dude? He was in his 70s. I thought he was in his 40s. So now, and anything he says coming out of his mouth, I believe. But he made a good point where he said that the reason that women don't age as fast or age much slower than men is women tend to take care of themselves. Like they tend to color their hair or, you know, Botox or get, if something's on their face, they cut it, they wear makeup, they dress more youthful. And your perception of yourself is your greatest enemy or ally in aging. If you look in the mirror and you're like, I'm fat and old and I look like shit and I got this gray beard and I look like crap, your body will age you much faster. Women trying to stay youthful tend to age much
slower. I'm set then.
I was going to say, like, I was like, it like that model to me is like, you know, night and day for my mom. Like my mom dresses young. She drives like a you know, young car. She got a puppy. She walks. She does all these things and people think she's in
her 60s. What's her Instagram?
My mom?
Yeah.
She doesn't like social media, but I'll send it to her. But like, she's super fit and she's 84. And like, she doesn't, like, she even went to the doctor and the doctor's like, I think this like shit's wrong. And it's just one of the facts that like, for the most part, men do not take care of themselves, you know?
But I think the one, I have a total respect for women and the fact that the routine they go through, it takes my wife, what, 30 to 45 minutes before she even goes to the gym. she looks freaking good.
Yeah.
And then at night, the end of night routine, yeah. where she's just like, if you just use this, what is it, like mycicillin on your face followed by a toner, it'll be completely different. Like I did it for a week and I'm like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore.
Well, but I mean, like even my daughters are almost 12. I have twin girls and they have like, my one daughter has this like whole like hair care routine thing that she does before bed. And she was taking it through it because my other daughter like won't do any of it. So she like forces her to do it. And it's hilarious to listen to them battle about, you didn't do the hair care routine. Oh my God, and I'm like, you know, but like, I don't know. I mean, it's probably like, but Michael Rose's deal about like, take care of yourself. Like if you got a big gray beard, or you're out of shape, this like stay in shape, stay young. Like don't let yourself, cause you hear guys all the time, like, oh, I'm so old. And you're like, well, you just convince yourself you just aged 10 years.
Yeah.
So well, that piece of just listening to Michael Rose talk and like looking at him and being like if you Google him, Michael Rose, PhD, AHS, whatever it is, you'll be blown away. Like he's gotta be in his 70s. I mean, 59. Like at that point I was like, I'm in. Okay. This makes total sense to me.
So have you guys watched this Live to 100, Secrets of the Blue Zones?
The Netflix thing.
Oh, yeah.
I watched it. I don't know if I buy it.
Bro, we binged out on it this weekend.
You know, well, here's
what. What don't you believe, John?
I don't like that they're pushing just a purely plant-based.
Yeah, that part. That's very Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like,
I'm not watching anymore.
No. So
it goes beyond
dude,
that.
I don't know if you've seen this, but like you're of Cuban heritage, but I have seen.
What does that mean?
Cubans like to cook and like to eat, right? I've never met a vegan Cuban, right? Especially living in Miami, we used to go to all these bitchin' Cuban places, and they can eat.
Well, my mom's from Italy, so it's
even worse. Okay, but what's crazy
is
I've met people through the years that were like vegans that had been like vegans for 20 or 30 years. Dude, they might as well look 400 years old.
Yeah.
Like I've seen, and especially like the people that eat like, you know, obviously, you know, but like even in Italy, I mean, in these other countries, you meet these people and like when you see the vegan people, they look old and
frail. You have to be very careful. Most of the people I know get very sinewy, dry skin. Yeah, they start to look terrible and not healthy. I'm sure, because then you see all those people on Instagram that are like totally ripped and they've been eating that way for years. You just must have to be really careful with your protein intake.
Yeah they keep their protein. They also take a bunch of drugs. They also take a bunch of drugs. Like, oh, I'm a vegan. But yeah, I'm pumping all this testosterone from my body. But I've seen pictures of like, you know, like, the vegan thing like makes people look like they dry out. They look like raisins. It like doesn't look good as they age. And so what kills me with this, when I would look at the Blue Zones, they push this plant-based. But when you look at it, like, yeah, they like the Okinawan, it's like, oh, they're plant-based. I'm like, I eat a bunch of sweet potatoes. I eat a lot of fish.
Yes.
So like all of these places, and then in like Turkey and Greece and Sardinia, like, are you telling me that in Sardinia they live on a plant-based diet? I'm like, no, they don't.
No.
No, 100% they don't.
Plenty of goat.
Yeah, goat, yep. A lot of cheese and dairy and fish and meat and everything. So
very keto.
Yeah.
But what I did find, I think if you have time to watch it, you'll appreciate that one of the things I found the common thread was the amount that people walk, the amount that people are active.
And they have communities. Like communities.
You've hit on this one big time.
Yeah, dude, community, the reason that men, like the suicide rates of men over the age of 30 to 50 is like 9 times higher than any other group. And the reason doing it is because guys tend to be like solo lone wolves, and then they, you know, they feel lonely, that they do shitty at having communities, and they end up killing themselves.
What gives you purpose to live? People to live for, things to look forward to. I mean, what's better?
Things to share with people.
Yeah.
And then, it's the best. You know, my favorite restaurant in the world is in Miami, Prime 112.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's my favorite steak.
I've been there. Where is it?
It's in South Beach.
Okay. I don't really eat steaks.
So. Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's like my favorite place. They have the most amazing steak, to the point where I actually went in the back and asked them how they made it. And they have these little ovens. You ever seen those where they cook the steaks like 1,500 degrees?
Yes.
I look at them all the time and I'm like, God, can I spend $2,000 on that thing? All right, let me get it.
My wife and I went and we had our cheat meal, which was sushi this weekend.
That's a cheat meal.
It was a cheat meal.
What's a non-cheat meal? Like hamburgers?
No, crumble. Have you had crumble? Uh-huh. Oh, crumble cookies are...
Yeah, I know what they are.
It's
like an institution around here.
Yeah.
My wife, they're like these $5 cookies.
They're national.
They might have like 700 calories per cookie because they're so calorically dense. Like my wife will get them for the kids and they cut them into 4 pieces. And if you have one piece, you're like, that might be the most calorically dense thing I've ever eaten.
Mm. Wow.
But I mean, the cookies are soft. They're just well done. They change the menu every week. Of course, they don't do it on Sunday. It's, I think, based out of Utah, or the headquartered out of Utah, very Christian-based. But she asked a question. She said, if you could only eat one food for the rest of your life, Like, is it steak? Is it sushi? Is it Italian? I'm like, oh, it's, I thought I was going to say steak. I love a good steak, but could you eat steak every freaking meal? At least with sushi, you can mix it up.
Yeah, I could eat a steak every meal for the rest of my life, but I could also eat sushi every day for the rest of my life.
I love sushi so much.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. But are you a sashimi guy, or are you also, you mix it up with rolls?
I like hand rolls. They hand look rolls. like what I call sushi ice cream cones. I just don't know why they bring them. I just like the cone and it's just the best.
The crunch on the outside. Yeah.
Yeah, with that. Nobu's in Miami. God, man, there's so many good spots. I love living in Miami. Mm-hmm. Until I realized that nobody worked and everybody stayed out all night, and there was no way I was going to be able to make it back in the NFL if I hung out in Miami longer.
That's the best change that's happened in Miami. It's like we got married there. I would go back to Miami all the time. I grew up going to Miami over the summer, and I would never live here. It's so transient. Everyone parties. No one really owns it. And after COVID, you know, the Bay Area, New York, everyone moved there. So there's a really close-knit community now.
Oh, nice.
A lot of parents, people looking. It also gave us, as we moved in, this great opportunity to like meet people really easily, because everybody had an appetite for community. So everyone was kind of there for the same reason. They were on the same page and open to like making great friendships. So now Miami's totally different.
Wow. Where in Miami do you live?
I live in an area called North Bay Island, mm-hmm. which is, my kids go to school in the Shores and mm-hmm. my parents on the beach. So it's like right off the causeway in the middle. It's like 10 minutes to each.
Dude, Miami is a great place. I don't know if I could live there. Like,
well, like,
because we party hard when we go there. It's like Vegas.
Yeah,
live here, right?
Yeah, we both do.
Yeah. Oh, because when I come here, I am drinking alcohol from the moment I land until I leave. So every time people from here,
2 hours
like,
before you work out.
Exactly. I've already had 3 drinks this morning. No, just kidding.
Dude, good on you.
This week will be different, but I'm just saying, like, the way you are as a tourist in a place is very. All my friends come to Miami, they're like, how do you live here? I'm like, I've been. What? Yeah. I've been going to work every day while you've been out till 4 a.m. Yeah.
But Vegas, there is something about Vegas. Like, I could never live in Vegas.
No.
My deal in Vegas is 24 hours. Any longer than 24 hours, I don't want to be there. I'm like one night only.
40 SEALs, 2 weeks.
In Vegas?
In Vegas.
Oh, somebody would die.
It was the quietest C-130 ride home.
Everybody's just like,
wow. Everyone's looking at each other like, I know what you did. I know what you did. So don't, yeah.
But again, if you live in Henderson,
is
it Henderson?
I believe so.
Any of those places, you don't go to the Strip. You know what I mean? Just like if you live in Miami, you don't go to South Beach really ever.
No.
I don't know. I don't know if I could put up with 110 plus degrees for an entire summer. Here? We've had the hottest summer in a long time.
It's been like 104 for like 70 days.
Wild.
It's awful. I mean, at least Miami, like there's sun, there's beach, whatever. Here, it's just hot.
The winters are great there.
Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. No, I loved Miami. I thought it was great. I just remember Space.
Of course.
Yeah, I know you know Space. But like we were at Space and like I saw the sun come up and like I got like a reflection off of some girl's like sunglasses and I was like, what am I doing with my life? And I think I just walked out and went home and like went back to Tampa and like never went back to South Beach.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You know,
a
you
lot
have
of
this,
other
like,
people have
yeah,
had that experience.
You have this like weird existential moment where you saw the sun come up and I'm like, what is wrong with me? I need to go. And that was it.
So you strike me as a guy who's not a status quo guy. And you did say earlier that the landscape is becoming increasingly competitive. What's Barry's going to be doing different going forward? I know the model's working, but we all also know if you stick with that, it begins to degrade.
Yep.
Where are you hoping over the next sort of 3 to 5 years you're going to take Barry's and change things up?
So I think it's really important to look at your business almost like a castle and try to envision what exists in your moat, if anything. And so I've made a list of like what we do differently and what we do better, I believe, than any of our competitors. And I'm just constantly spending time investing in those things. That's why I'm here actually in Austin. We have a talent summit. And the whole reason we're here and, you know, 40 of our top instructors are here is to one up the way that we're doing things and to ensure that those moments I talked about earlier, those hero moments, those beat drops, they're happening in every single class. We do the same thing operationally, right? So we're constantly innovating, coming up with now, if you take Barry's for the first time, you have a handwritten note waiting for you on your treadmill, on your bench.
Huge.
So trying to step up hospitality, do all the things I think we're doing well, but much better. And in terms of what's next, I think I mentioned the modalities that we've tested mm-hmm. recently. So mm-hmm. we have Barry's Lift, which is very popular. It's actually the most highly utilized concept we have. So it sells out constantly. It's just 50 minutes of weightlifting. And then Barry's Ride, which we just piloted in Chelsea, and we're opening shortly in West Hollywood. So continued expansion of the brand, both domestically and globally, of our core product. But now what I really love is the extension of the brand into new ideas and new modalities.
I mean, you must watch these other companies. I mean, even 24-hour fitness, Lifetime, Golds, they know that their models are dwindling and they're replicating what you guys are doing. Mm-hmm. Is it, you know, you just sort of believe that, yeah, they're never going to be able to reach the standard for performance on anything we do, or does that force you to innovate as well?
You're saying whether or not I see big box gyms
replicating what you got.
Well, what they do too is they do too much. So what I like about Barry's is they know who they are. Well, they're true to their core beliefs, yeah. And they do something that's very boutique and it's very specific. Like, they're not all of a sudden trying to train power lifters in this. They do what they do and they do it well. Yep. Whereas you go to Gold's Gym and it's like, oh, you got a cardio burn class. You got this. You have like 400 different things. And I'm like, how do you do 400 things well? You don't. You just do a whole lot of things average and mediocre and hope to God that people pay for the membership and never show up. Like, I'd be curious to know what, Barry's actual, hey, if we have 1,000 paying members, like, what's like the weekly show up? Like, how many people are showing up? Is it 80%?
Well, we operate a little differently because we're not a membership based business. It's really like packages that people purchase. So we do track churn to the extent that we can, but we really look at how often and frequently people are coming, and it's anywhere between 2 to 3 times a week.
And then with the classes, like, what's the percentage of, are 100% of the classes sold out, or like, what's like the kind of the market?
Sort of depends again on the studio. We have some, suburban studios or secondary city studios that, utilization is somewhere between 50 to 60%. And then we have other studios in urban dense markets that were, 85 plus.
Sure.
So we have a studio in Chelsea, New York City, where we see over 700 people a day.
Wow.
Which is wild. Yeah. To maintain a facility, seeing that many people.
I've never heard of that model, the packages.
Oh, it's genius.
That's interesting.
No, I mean, it's so smart. It's just like, hey, I buy 10 and then they come 10 and you sell them another 10. I mean, it's great. It's such a smart model opposed from some like recurring revenue, kind of like membership deal. And then it's like, how many times do you come? It just feels complicated. It's like.
You certainly maximize your paid rate. Yeah. So, but the challenge is, which we've learned over the last couple of years as we've moved into sort of secondary markets, is that model doesn't work everywhere, especially markets where we're going in and, the Orange Theories of the world have already trained people, like, mm-hmm. You're going to pay bare minimum membership only. Yep. So we have some markets where we are membership first, and it's probably 80%+ of our.
But that's got to be great for your coaches or your trainers or whatever. I'm assuming the people that are leading the classes, you can probably track like, hey, these people have a 10 pack. And everybody's spending it on these people. You can kind of track it almost and be like, okay, this is our superstar. We need to like find more of these people. And maybe this guy's not producing as well.
Well, I was going to say, it's also like skin in the game. It's like yoga. When I buy a 10 yoga session package, I'm utilizing each of those 10 sessions.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm tracking those with a membership. I mean, yeah. You see it. People are like, yeah, I just took all last month off.
Well, so like when I sat down and I remember, I got asked to, through the NFL, they had like this big summit on gyms, and they asked me to sit on a panel and talk about, because I owned a gym, but it was like a micro gym, and they had all these cool people. And the big box gyms, their entire deal is, we hope to God people aren't showing up.
It's so, called turn them and burn them.
Yeah.
That's how learned how to sell memberships.
So Gold's Gym functions in like a 3 to 5% show up rate. So like, let's say they have 100,000 memberships sold. Like, as long as 3 to 5 people show up, they're okay. If everybody shows up, they're out of business. So they're praying that people won't show up. That was like the whole deal with what's
psychology.
The one gym where they like don't want the gunk alarm.
I hate that place. Planet Fitness.
Planet Fitness. So they figured out that if they could get people in for free pizza, like all of those things, like are retention initiatives. Like, well, I didn't come to the gym, but they're getting free pizza, so I'll stay.
That was one of the biggest hurdles for big box gyms in terms of revenue coming out of the pandemic. Is, I think, depending on the gym, it's like 15 to 20%, sometimes more, of their revenue is actually people that don't show up. And they lost all that revenue during the pandemic because people just canceled all their memberships to gyms. They thought about it. It was top of mind for them. So coming out of COVID, they have to like quickly recollect, but it's hard to do that. People that aren't going to show up.
Yeah,
imagine losing.
They're not going to go back up and show up and give you your money back.
Planet Fitness, was that formed off of the concept of Robo Gym?
No, the entire concept, it's like they worked backwards. So like, okay, we need X amount of people. How do we get them? Or how do we get the people to pay? Like, it's a pretty fascinating case study. But like the whole thing where they kept pizza parties and give away free food and stuff, they figured like, well, as long as they're paying, like they won't quit if we give them some free stuff. And like, what's pizza cost? Like a nickel to make? It's really fat. It's totally messed up.
Whenever we travel, somebody's like, well, there's a Planet Fitness down the road. I'm like, I don't know. I won't do it. Nah. I won't go. I'm like, I'll go to the YMCA where the weights are rusty and you get tetanus.
Some YMCAs, there's one in Charlotte. Oh, there are. So nice.
Yeah, I've been to some nice YMCAs.
And there's some that you walk in, you're like, oh, you guys need to clean this place.
Yeah.
Bad.
Well, you touched on something I think that's key in how you think about boutique fitness, which is our business dies if people don't come, right? Because obviously it's deferred revenue and that's one way you can look at it, but they're not going to buy another 10 pack. And that's how they churn, right? They don't buy their packages. They don't show up. So businesses like mine invest in clients, in the relationship, in celebrating like milestones. If you're doing your 10th or 50th class of berries, you show up, the light board says your name, the instructor's cheering you on, you're taking pictures at the end. So you've seen those obviously all over social. So you really are invested in your client, and you know this because you owned one yourself. You want to see them continue on, obviously financially, but also personally. I mean, you were saying you were took it personally.
Oh my God. Well, like you invest in these people and you're like, and they're making progress and they're like, I'm just not going to come next month. And you're like, I can't believe I'm this fucking invested in this relationship and you don't want to hang out with me.
Yeah.
Oh, it just, and that's when I knew I shouldn't be in the gym business. I was way better to educate coaches and do what I do on my side than actually deal with end users. Because like you get to the point where you are so invested in these people that like when they like don't do well or this, you're like kind of living and dying. And I'm like, I'm not cut out for this.
Yeah. Would you both have built followings, strong followings, again, using the big box gyms. You never see people post about going to 24-Hour Fitness or Lifetime or Gold's. I mean, you guys have built, I don't want to say a cult, but you've built,
I make Kool-Aid every single day, as I'm sure you do. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not mad. Believe me, I'll stir that stuff. As long as the Kool-Aid is making people better, not killing them, I'm happy to give it to them.
And I've been drinking the Kool-Aid for 20 years.
And he's really, 70 and he looks great. Yeah, so seriously. Obviously that Kool-Aid's a fountain of youth.
You, the term company man, you know, we usually use that in a derogatory. No, it's like to believe in something is great. To believe in the company to the point where it's part of your DNA. Mm-hmm. I actually think that's I have somebody called me a company man. They didn't mean it as a compliment. I'm like, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, Joey, thanks for coming in. I think what we need to do is you need to get some guys like Victor and yourself, and we all need to go down. And
that'd
do
be
various.
So fun.
I guarantee it's going to push parts of us that are.
Oh
like,
yeah. No, it's tough. My wife would be perfect for it. She would
bring her.
Yeah, she'll slay it.
So
you live here in Austin.
Yeah.
You go back to Newport a lot or no?
Yeah. My mom and my brothers all live right in the back bay.
Because we're opening Fashion Island.
Are you there?
In a few months. So.
Okay. Yeah. No, we, I don't know if you know. Well, you said you did, but I used to live down by the Wedge.
Oh, okay.
And then I lived in the Cannery Lofts.
Ah.
And then when we had kids, we moved up into the back bay, kind of like Dover Shores area.
That's awesome. My kids were at camp there all month.
Yep. And then we had a dude in a matte black Lamborghini pull up and buy my home in cash.
Wow.
Dude, this guy, like, literally, I was sitting, like, at my table like this, and there's a window. We could see the front. And I see this dude, like, matte black Lamborghini convertible. The dude gets out wearing, like, black jeans, V-neck black, dog tags, sunglasses. And then he goes and he gets his girl out of the car. She's wearing a yellow, like, jumpsuit with, like leopard skin pumps and a leopard skin, like fur jacket. And I like see him get out of the car and they start walking up and I yell at my wife. I'm like, honey, there's weirdos outside. Oh my gosh. And the dude literally knocked on our door and he's like, oh, you know, we had this bitch in like one story, 60s Brady Bunch mid-century home. And the guy's like, we want to, you know, this is my Butch. This is, and I swear, I think he said his girl's name was Candy. And we want to buy a 60s mid-century home. We want to buy yours. And I was like our home wasn't for sale. And the dude basically like gave a realtor call to me and the guy offered us $1 million more than what we paid.
Wow,
and we were gone awesome. 30 days later, went into a rental and then bought our ranch here and moved out here. And that was the end of 16. So this is pre-Joe Rogan, before Austin exploded.
Wow.
And now.
Yeah, COVID changed everything.
Oh my God. Joe Rogan is
everything.
Like
housing market.
Austin should name Joe Rogan the world's greatest realtor.
Yeah.
Because.
Him and Elon.
Oh my
Elon God. Would say, yeah.
Well, dude, it was Joe Rogan on his podcast talking about how great Austin is. And like a million people moved here for that very reason. Yeah. So.
There's a running joke where it said. It was an Oklahoma, welcome to Oklahoma sign, but they put a welcome to Texas over it for the Californians moving over.
Yeah.
Well, Joey, man, congrats, 50 locations within the nation. Another, you said how many internationally?
We're 84.
84 total. Yeah. So I think for the listeners, hey, if you need to mix things up or you've taken a longer break than necessary, visit a Barry boot camp, go to the website, look it up. You can find Joey Gonzalez at Joey Gonzalez on Instagram. Goddamn, dude, you need to submit yourself for fittest CEO in the United States. I'm looking at these pictures, and my wife would be like, "Yeah, she'd be like, you need to do some work."
We also have shameless plug Barry's X, which is our app to work out with us online because we aren't in every city in the U.S.
No kidding. Can do and just what does somebody need at home in terms of a couple weights?
I mean, you need a couple weights. You could do just weight only classes. We have treadmill only. We have a mix of the two. Yeah.
Smart. Good. Well, dude, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. It's great.
Good luck with the Talent Summit. That's awesome that you guys are actually doing that. Yeah. I've not heard that within the fitness community, and safe travels back to
I imagine it taking place at like a pool party, like with a lot of drinks and music. And they're like, our Talent Summit's at a pool party. I know.
Where's my invitation, dude? Of course, I can bring my wife. Yeah. So
She'd be right in the mix.
I know.
She got a great tan. She got a great tan. Every time I see her, she's so tan.
My wife?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she got a good tan.
Why are you looking at my wife, Dad?
Because, like, when I saw her, like, I noticed these things that, like, people have good tans. Your wife had a good tan.
Thank you. I appreciate that. She would appreciate
that. That means she leaves or lives a life of leisure if she's that tan.
She works her ass off. She does. And, like, she's gone through a transformation. That means she looks good. That's why I can't go to Lifetime, too, is because all the dudes come up. And it's just like, oh, fuck you. Now. Okay. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Again, Joey Gonzalez, thanks for joining us. Well, John. Thank you. I'll see you again, dude.
Yeah, it's fine. It's good.
We're out here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue one last year.
I know, by a wide margin, too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court. But we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the Reproductive Rights Amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported issue one last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.